it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast,
a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Matt Bream, 24/7 Sports, is coming up, covers the Ducks. Ask him about Oregon's game against Chip Kelly at UCLA, Saturday, 12:30, Autzen Stadium. Anna, before I do that, is going to make a special offer, speaking mostly to the gentlemen who are out there listening to the show. Anna, what do you have as an incentive? And this is going to be one listener who is quick on the draw who gets this.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so listen carefully. This is going to help you with your Christmas shopping. You've probably not heard of Beauty Counter if you're a guy, but I'm pretty sure your wife has, or, you know, whoever the woman in your life is. I've got a Beauty Counter package. It's valued at $226. So it's got the Counter Time Tripeptide Radiant Serum. There's a gloss in Magnolia Shimmer. I know, you're so excited about this. There's their number one brightening oil.
And Omaha.
I have no idea what that means. And a charcoal face mask. Believe me, the woman in your life will love this because it's incredible product. The company itself is awesome because they're all about safe products, safe ingredients, responsible sourcing, all of that. And I use this stuff. It's awesome. And I'm cheap. Like, I've never paid
a lot of frugal.
I'm cheap. I don't like paying a lot of money for anything. But this is like the one thing that I will splurge on for myself. So guys, splurge on this one thing. It's a $226 package. If you make a donation right now of $150, $150, okay, you're getting a $226 value Beauty Counter skin package. You can check it out at BFT. It's not on the website. I'm just telling you about it.
This is where you disintegrate.
Oh, sorry.
So you're offering this to one listener,
yes,
who is quick on the draw.
Yes. No, it's
this
not.
This is not an auction item.
No, you have to be in to win right now.
The first person to call in and make a $150 donation
gets this $226 Beauty Counter.
Gets the Beauty Counter package.
Yes.
Basically, you're going to be a hero. 503-417-7575 is the number. First person, that's it. Only one of these available. Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, is joining us. Matt, you're not eligible to win that, by the way. Hey, but what? Let me ask you before we talk Ducks. Did you look at the BFTauction.com site? Did you pick something out that you would bid on?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I mean, what Anna was saying and how she's not she doesn't spend a lot of money on stuff, that's exactly my wife. I was literally like, just sell it to me. I'll buy it. I'll do it. So outside of that, my wife would love to go to the beach. The 3-day weekend would be something I would score a lot of brownie points with. Personally, I would also do the golf celebrity foursome. That would probably put me in the doghouse, which would force me to buy the beach if I bought both. But those are the two that stood out to me.
I love that. If you want to bid on those items, you can go to BFTauction.com to do that. Matt, let's talk about the game. They set the kickoff time 12:30 UCLA, Oregon, Autzen Stadium. This used to be like the Chip Kelly game. It doesn't feel like it's the Chip Kelly Bowl anymore. Yeah. That's kind of in the rearview mirror. What is this game about now for Oregon?
For Oregon, it's continuing to show improvement and continuing to play or try to play a full, complete football game. Because I think if they play a full, complete football game, they beat everybody that's in this conference by more than two or three scores. I'll say three, even, because they beat Washington State by two. I think when you look at Oregon and you look at the rest of the conference, you look at this and think they're the best team. Their issue is they haven't played a game. Not everyone else can say the same thing, but you know the defense probably has not been as good as we expected, primarily for me, which is really surprising, up front. Their defensive line and front seven have had some issues stopping the run and generating a pass rush. Both of those will be important parts of their game plan to beat UCLA. You know, DTR, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, their star junior quarterback, threw for over 200 yards last week, ran for over 100 yards, also ran for a touchdown. Keeping him contained, whoever's on spy needs to be very astute where he's at all times and to, you know, follow with their eyes and be disciplined. And then, you know, they can't get blown up off the line of scrimmage. So I look at this and think this is an opportunity. 12:30 kick, middle of the day for most of the country. Dominate. Play at your highest level for a full quarters, and let's see what people are saying if Oregon can walk away with a three-score game.
Matt Preem, 24/7 Sports, is with us. Does UCLA scare you at all? They've got a quarterback in Dorian Thompson-Robinson who can make some plays. They got some receivers who are decent. They don't look terrible.
Yeah, I think this game will be close at half, and it wouldn't surprise me even if it's, you know, in the early parts of the third quarter, if this is a one-score game. You know, DTR is dangerous. You know, Chip Kelly is still, you know, in my personal opinion, still a good coach. You know, we'll see what happens. I mean, they ran tempo against California on Sunday, and Kelly later on would say that, you know, they did that because they were playing an opponent who hadn't played a game yet this season, and they did it in limited spurts as a way to kind of tire out the defense and up front specifically. Oregon is going to be in better shape, better conditions than Cal is, because they've played games. They've played two games just like UCLA has. I look at this and think, though, that, you know, on paper, Oregon should be the bigger, the more physical, the stronger, the deeper team, and it's going to be similar to what we've seen with the first 2 weeks of the season, where maybe UCLA keeps it close in the first half, but over time, if Oregon does what they should do, UCLA should wear down and Oregon should pull away.
Justin Flo, freshman linebacker at Oregon, goes to Instagram, five-star recruit. Looks like he is out for the season. It's a weird year because, you know, really as a reporter, you're at the mercy of the coach sort of disclosing injuries, and You know, we're all looking on game day going, all right, what's going on with the tight ends? Where is Flo? And yep. We're having to read the tea leaves a little bit, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, that's the only reason, really, I went to Pullman, was to see what players actually made the trip, see which players are warming up where, what players are dressed, and then if, you know, during the game, if there is an injury, to see what, you know, is transpiring off the field, which you can't see from a TV angle. Mario Cristobal was not happy about Justin Flo's stuff getting out. I can tell you that much. He addressed it before we were even able to ask questions. He gave a full injury report, and look, he was more forthcoming in that, you know, 30 seconds on Flo and Oregon's other various injuries on Wednesday afternoon than he'd been all of camp. And that's just because I think everyone kind of knew. He probably knew Flo. He's going to get asked about Flo, get ahead of the story, tell us a little bit so we don't ask anything else. But, you know, we were told he wanted the information out, and that they're only going to, you know, release information when it needs to be. They're not going to go into detail about injuries and whatnot, which is a little bit different from previous years because we can't see. And I understand why. And then later on in the session, he was, you know, going to be asked a question about Flo's status and just, you know, regards to how he's handling it, and he shut it down. He wasn't going to even discuss injuries other than just saying he's not available. He wouldn't even say he's out for the year, but just would say he's unavailable.
Is the logic there that, hey, if I start a precedent here, then I'm going to have to talk about other injuries. We'll have to talk about Spencer Webb and whether or not he's got a broken collarbone and other stuff like that?
Yeah, I think so. And he also comes forward of that he doesn't want to give a competitive advantage to an opponent. Or if they hold some kind of advantage over an opponent, he doesn't want to have to give that up unless he absolutely needs to. And right now he doesn't. I asked him kind of what were the adjustments that you were making at halftime between Washington State's first half of that game and the second half. And he goes out and says, well, there were adjustments made, but we're not going to explain them because we don't want to, give up a competitive advantage that we have. And that kind of seemed a little ridiculous, but from an injury standpoint, I get it. Like, I understand we're not there, and if we were at practice, we'd be able to say, oh, well, Spencer Webb's not running with the first team, or this guy's not even practicing because he's with the injured group. That stuff would get out. He needs to get every kind of competitive advantage you can possibly get, but this isn't just crystal ball. Every football coach is paranoid, and if they think they've got the slightest bit of an edge over their opponent, they're going to hold on to that thing for dear life.
Chip Kelly at UCLA, this would be a huge win for him. He's finally 500 in a season at UCLA. This would be a big win. They would probably celebrate it as a pivot point. He'd beat his own school. What has happened, do you think, to Chip Kelly at UCLA?
You know, it's so strange. Like, I was talking earlier today with my UCLA counterpart for the 24/7 Sports Network, Mike Regalado, and he was mentioning how everyone was like, oh, well, the tempo, you guys ran the tempo and, Oregon days, and that seemed to really be a key point for you in beating Cal. And he said that Kelly made the comment of, what I ran at Oregon is what I ran at Oregon. I'm not running that here at UCLA. I'm running something else. And what happened at Oregon happened at Oregon. It's in the past. We move forward. And I when he told me that, I was just like, that doesn't make sense, because the reason why UCLA hired Chip Kelly was because of, in large part, the success at Oregon, and hoping that he could replicate that now in Westwood and at UCLA. And the whole a win against Oregon would be huge for that program. And like you said, it's the first time in his career at UCLA that he's 500. He has in his 4 years at Oregon, in his first 2 years with the Eagles, he had 16 losses over that 6 year period. He has 19 losses in three and a half years, excuse me, as a head coach since then. I mean, that's mind-boggling stuff. I look at this and think, this is a guy that UCLA is looking at it and saying, this is not what we were envisioning 3 years in. We were thinking we were going to be competing for conference championships. And you wonder if this season goes downhill again and they finish 2-4, 1-5, coaches are getting shorter leashes. And does UCLA look into their pockets and think, do we have enough money to make a change, or do we need to make a change? So, yeah, this could be a pivotal game for his career and his time at UCLA.
I've been impressed with Joe Moorhead as a coordinator, but I thought we really saw it against Washington State. They were not predictable. I had no idea what they were going to do, and I loved it. What'd you think?
Oh, I one of the first things I thought of was, not to harp on the Chip Kelly stuff, but I felt like the team's speed was similar to the Kelly years, where they just looked faster than Washington State. They looked quicker, they looked bigger, they were stronger. And then, like you said, like, the offense was fun. Like, I feel like the couple previous seasons at Oregon, and it started probably in 2016, like, there wasn't those explosion plays. There wasn't those quick strike drives. There wasn't the opportunity where, oh, wow, the ball's going this direction, and then you look up and it's in a whole different part of the football field, and they're going for 40 yards. And, that just was missing. And I think the first two games under Jim Moorhead, it's clear they've gotten a huge upgrade at the quarterback, at the offensive coordinator position, and that this offense is utilizing players to the best skill sets and doing it in creative ways, which is keeping opponents on their toes because they don't know what's coming. I mean, how many times have we seen plays be set up with a fly sweep and then or the crack back block with the tight end, and then all of a sudden they leak the guy out instead of, you know, the block, or they leak the guy out instead of the handoff, and the receiver goes off into the flat and gets a big gain, or the quarterback holds it and runs up the other direction for 40 yards like Tyler Shuck did in that Washington State game. I just think the creativity is awesome. The pace, the tempo is awesome, and the execution and what they're doing has just been tremendous.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, covers the Ducks. Good follow on Twitter. Make sure you're following him, especially in and around the games. Before I cut you loose, Peyton Pritchard to the Celtics. Your rapid reaction on that?
Oh, it was one of the best outcomes possible for him. He goes to a franchise that's known for winning, has a winning culture. Brad Stevens is a very good coach. I think he's cut from a similar cloth of Dana Altman's in terms of just how they handle themselves and how they coach and big picture type stuff. And, you know, he's going to get pushed, and he goes into a situation where I felt like Pritchard needs to go somewhere where there's winning. He needs to go somewhere where they've got an established kind of core group, and they're looking for, you know, one or two guys to be added into the picture and to just do one or two different things from what the current roster has. You know, if Pritchard was going to be thrust into a position where, hey, we need you to play 24 minutes a night right away, we need you to run the team and get everything set up, like, I don't know if he necessarily could have done that and excelled. I think he could have tried, but I don't know if it would have taken, if you will. Now, in his current spot, hey, we need shooting. We need you to come in and provide shooting for 15 minutes. We need you to come in and just initiate the offense for 15 minutes while Kemba Walker gets a breather. I think it's a perfect scenario. Today, they decided to decline an option on their backup point guard, Wanamaker. To me, that's a very strong indication that, hey, we believe in Peyton Pritchard so much so we're going to take him over a guy that's been in the league for a couple of years and it's had this role before, and we think we can groom Pritchard to become someone even better than Wanamaker was.
Pac-12 celebrating today, 10 players drafted, 6 in the first round. I go back to March, though. We only had Oregon as a top 8 seed in this tournament. Why so many good players but not so many impressive teams?
That's a good question. I mean, I think Washington had two guys picked in the first round, Isaiah Stewart, Jaden McDaniels. Stewart, I get. McDaniels, that's one that's, you know, drafted on potential. He was very unimpressive, in my opinion, in his lone season with the Huskies. Tyrell Terry didn't get picked. He was first pick in the second round. But you look at USC's guy, big guy, Onyekwo, you know, talented dude, big guy. USC had a decent year. Arizona had some guys get picked in the first round, Najee and Josh Green, but they did not have the year that replicated the success of all those first rounders. That's a tough question to answer. I part of it's coaching. I mean, I think Dan Altman is above and beyond the best coach from an X's and O's, you know, schematic standpoint within the league. Other coaches are better than, you know, from a charisma, PR, recruiting standpoint than Dana personally, but he makes up for it in other areas. I don't know. I mean, I part of it also could be just, you know, lack of national attention, you know, similar to what the football side of things is dealing with. They haven't had a lot of teams make the Final Four. I mean, Oregon's the last team to do it in 2017. Arizona flirted with the Elite Eight a couple years, but, you know, it's been a while since UCLA has been really good. And, you know, they went on that 4 straight run to the Final Four, 4 years in a row, was it, I think, or maybe it was 3. But they just haven't had a lot of success. And I think as a conference, it's been decades since they've won a national championship. That always helps. And then I just think, when UCLA and Arizona have down years, the conference is viewed in a negative light.
There's a chance now for Pac-12 football teams to play non-Pac-12 teams out of conference games. BYU could end up playing some games. Looks like Colorado and Colorado State might try to play a game this weekend. you know, what do you make of that? Is that exciting to you that maybe, you know, there could be a cancellation and suddenly BYU is coming to Autzen Stadium?
Yeah, I mean, well, I can tell you right now, Colorado, I think today has already said they're not playing a Mountain West Conference team. And it's also come out that the Mountain West Conference's testing protocols do not line up with what the required protocols are for the conference and the Pac-12 to play a non-con game. So we can already kind of wipe out the Mountain West right now. Maybe things change. One, I love the idea. I think it's smart. It's a good thing to do if you can pull it off. I think everyone clamoring for all of a sudden Oregon and USC to schedule a BYU or a Cincinnati is silly because it's, well, first of all, you need a game to be canceled. There's no open dates. You know, the Pac-12's at a game if need be. You know, you're going to need a game to get canceled. And I don't think it's kooky talk in my eyes to say, well, let's eliminate one conference game for Oregon or one conference game for USC so that they could play a BYU or a Cincinnati in place of a regular game. That just seems a headache. And now you're picking favorites within your conference, which you're not technically on paper supposed to be doing. And part of me is also kind of like, what are we doing? Like in September or in August, the Pac-12 came out and said, hey, we're not playing non-conference games. We're going to play a shortened season. And then and we're going to play 10 games. We're going to give ourselves, extra breaks to make up games. And then a month later, they came out and they said, we're actually not going to play any games now. And then a month after that, they came out and said, well, we want to play in October, but we can't get everyone on board or the conference can't get on board as in a unified form. So we're going to play, but we're going to play 7 games, but we're going to start in November. And now in November, they're saying, oh, but we're going to actually go back to our theory and we're going to allow teams to play some non-conference games if they want to, if the situation presents itself. Like, this whole thing is just kind of crazy to me and kind of just funny to watch personally. Like, we all heard about bubbles can't work because this is a collegiate atmosphere and we're doing what's best for the student athlete, not the athlete, the student athlete. And as the season's gone on, as games have gotten canceled and teams have seen the value of playing these games, it's, oh, well, if we can pull off some kind of game to be played and make $500,000, let's do it. And it's just kind of like, if you embrace that mentality and understood that the college experience in 2020 fall and probably the rest of this academic year is not going to be a normal year in which students aren't on campus. They're not taking classes and are on campus at all. Really. It's all remote. You know, if they would have just embraced that idea and gone to the bubble at the very beginning of the season, because the athletes they're going to the football facility, they're getting treatment, they're practicing, they're watching film and they're going back home to do their schoolwork. You know, that's basically their routine right now. You know, if they would have embraced the bubble, maybe they could have played 10 games at the beginning of the year, or maybe they could have built in some weeks where they had some buys and some flexibility to play some games. And so I applaud the move. I like it. You're being flexible. But at the same time, it's just kind of like you're just running around in circles right now.
Yeah, it feels nutty, and the players not a lot of skin in the game because they've got the extra year of eligibility. Matt Prehm, I appreciate you, buddy. 24/7 Sports. Follow him on Twitter as well. Thank you, Matt, for joining us. Leave it right here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide. Got some special offers coming up for those of you who want to help out kids in our community, in our state. Got much more radio ahead on this show as well. Big day of radio tomorrow as we wind towards the college football weekend. I want to put this offer out for somebody who's got a youth basketball team. Marshall Cho is one of the best basketball coaches that I've ever met, and he is the high school coach at Lake Oswego High School. He is offering a group and private lesson as part of this fundraiser. 10 to 12 kids in the gym for gym time. This could be a voucher for when they're allowed to hold in-person workouts. But do you have a youth basketball team that would benefit from getting coaching from one of the best coaches in the state of Oregon? $150 donation. First person to call, 503-417-7575, gets the personalized instruction from Lake Oswego High School coach Marshall Cho to your group or your kid. It could be a birthday party, for example, or something else. 503-417-7575. $150 donation gets that auction lot.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.